You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're just your all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
We are proud members of the Broadway Podcast Network. Make sure you check out broadwaypodcastnetwork.com/Broadway Husbands to see the array of amazing Broadway-themed podcasts that they host. And we are super excited today because we have special guests, Steven,
Megan Sikora, and Barrett Martin. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey. Thanks for having us. How's it going?
We are so happy to have you here.
We're so happy to be here.
We wish we were seeing you in person as opposed to, you know, virtually, but such is the norm at this point.
And so between the two of them, they have 20 Broadway credits. Is that
true? Yeah, even now. I liked it better when I had more.
10 and 10? 10 and 10? I think that's what I saw.
We're even now. No competition in your house.
No, not at all.
Well, I think that's pretty amazing. We were looking at your IBDB and looking at where on that timeline. So maybe actually, Megan, why don't you start and tell us before we get to how you two met, how did you end up in New York? How did you even start getting those Broadway credits? Like, what was your background?
Well, I'm a little bit of a weirdo. I did not grow up with theater experience. Like, I wasn't exposed to musical theater. I was a dancer, like straight up went to a Dolly Dinkle dance studio. I had an amazing teacher. It was like two rooms over top of a bakery, basically. And she, when I got older and, you know, I was a competition kid, like a lot of us, she was like, you need to learn more. So she would send me to, I'm from Pittsburgh Ballet, CLO. Like I would take classes down there, blah, blah, blah. Steven, I'm sure you're familiar with all that.
Yes, I am.
And I was like, you know, when I got older, I was just like, well, I'm going to be a professional dancer, but I didn't know what that meant or how to do that. My dance teacher took me to see Cats, which I actually was pretty bored with, but sorry, all you Cats fans, but I saw that you can make a living being a dancer. And so I was like, musical theater, that's what I have to do. Right. So I was like, I'm moving to New York and I'm going to do this. And my mother was like, no, please, 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 please don't do that. You're not ready. And she was right. So I went to Point Park and I was a dance major, not a theater major, but I got incredible training. And I actually almost, I was going to dance with Hubbard Street in Chicago because I got like into that whole world of dance. Mm-hmm. But I realized quickly when I was there that I like to talk and I'm not.
And, you won't get to do that at Hubbard Street.
No. I got yelled at a lot. I got yelled at a lot. So I was like, but why? Like, why am I going over there? What's my purpose? And I realized too that I was very lucky and my dance teacher, she taught us how to dance from an actor's point of view without even knowing that she was doing it. So then I moved to New York and I just pounded the pavement. I just, you know, hit it hard and I'm really stubborn. After my first year at Point Park, I did do the Pittsburgh CLO. I did the full season. Back then they would hire people to do all five shows for the season or whatever. So I got my equity card. So I was really lucky in that I started off with an equity card and with connections, mm-hmm. with relationships, right? So my first year, I moved here in 98, and my first fall, I got the Radio City Christmas show because I knew the dance captain, Michael Clowers. Cause I was a ballerina bear, but I'm a tall ballerina bear. So he was like, wink, wink, how tall are you? And I was like, 5'3". And they were like, okay. So that was like, it's all about, you know, so much of it is building those relationships and working hard and showing up. And that's what got me in the door, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up doing 42nd Street with Michael Clowers, which was my Broadway debut. But that's how it all, the ball started rolling.
Nice.
And Barrett, what about you? What was your background?
So I grew up mostly in the Midwest, the Chicago area. So I started dancing at 3 years old. My parents put me in tap class. I loved it. I continued with that as a child. And, you know, the Chicago area gave me opportunities for some great classes and some great teachers. And
Ben Vereen.
One of my dance teachers was good friends with Ben Vereen. So growing up, I got to meet him and work with him a couple times. Doing community theater in the Chicago area and getting hired as a child for professional productions to play a child, you know, play Winthrop in Music Man or Young Patrick in MAME and various productions gave me experience with theater. And then once I kind of climbed the totem pole as a dancer, I guess, I worked at a theme park in my high school years, Six Flags Great America. I graduated high school early to go take a job at Disney in Florida, doing the Beauty and the Beast show down there that is still there.
We went.
I then ended up on a.
Were you the Prince Belle? It's me. Were you that?
No. I was not. From there, I got a cruise ship job. So I did 6 months on a cruise ship. And then I moved to LA and I did some more work for Disney in LA. And then I got the tour of a replacement, track. I replaced Ben Cameron on the tour of Footloose when he left the tour. And that was my first equity job. I mean, Disney was equity, but it was optional. But that was my first equity job, was the national, tour of Footloose. And then I got another national tour, which made me go, okay, you got to move to New York. This is what you're getting hired for. They're not hiring you for music videos in LA, at 6'2" white guy. I went my way to New York and that's when I got my Broadway debut was, the huge hit Urban Cowboy. And from there I just, you know, audition, take the next.
I remember I was at the callbacks for Urban Cowboy, and I think you were there too, and we had to like partner. Do you remember?
There was some serious like two-stepping partnering. Yeah.
I had to like lift the girl up from the floor onto my shoulder and something crazy. It was nuts.
So like, I did not sign up for that.
This is a guess, but my guess was that you all met because you both were in Wicked at some point. Did you meet during Wicked, or how did you all meet? Is that right? That was my guess. I was like, maybe they met doing Wicked.
We did.
Is that true? Okay.
True.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, it was a.
It was a blink of an eye.
I was covering a medical leave at that point. I had done Wicked in Chicago, the company that opened Chicago. I had opened that company, but then they called me. They called me about coming in for a medical leave in New York. And
was Kate actually Linda too when you came in to New York?
No, none. Oh, maybe she might have been.
She was there.
Yeah, she might have been.
It all mushes together.
But I came in, and a couple of weeks after being there, this one came back from a leave of absence. Doing Wicked, doing Curtains in LA for their out of town tryout, and we overlapped for 3-4 weeks. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think
You know, like
maybe not. I think it was 3 weeks.
Yeah,
like 3 weeks.
So who talked to who first?
Like how did that evolve after 3 weeks?
Yeah,
4 weeks.
Well, I came back and which is like, oh my God, everybody, hi, you know, I'm back. And then there's this really tall, really quiet person sitting in the green room.
And wait, you know, one second. Since I know Wicked now, since I've just done it, mm-hmm. What tracks were you?
My track changed after I left. So I was the hedge hare, right? So
yeah.
I technically was Lindsay Northern. right? Lindsay replaced me, but I was a dancer track and the Elphaba track was the singer track. And then Brandy and I left at the same time and they swapped it. So the Elphaba track became the dancer track and the Glinda understudy track became the singer track. Can't talk.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure which track I was. Like,
what were you a monkey?
I did have to be a monkey once. I had one monkey cross. It was a very, I didn't when I was in Chicago, but it was a hybrid track. You know, they changed them.
Yeah. I was just very curious.
I had to do one monkey track, one monkey cross. That was it.
Huh. Yeah.
So you're in the green room. So you're in the green room.
The girls' dressing room feeds out of the green room, right? So I'm coming out of the dressing room. We're going up to the stage. And I was just like, who is that guy? Like, why is he talking? He's so quiet. And whenever I meet people like that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to break you. I'm going to get in there, right? So then I'm just started like picking. But I was married to somebody else at the time and on my way out of that marriage. So it hadn't, like, I wasn't in a space to be like falling in love with anybody. I was pretty actually miserable at the time dealing with the divorce. So I was like, the very beginning stages of a divorce too. So I was just like more intrigued by who this guy was. And then we had like understudy rehearsal together and we had to partner for like a split second.
Yeah. And then when we were on a break in the wings, I remember specifically, I at that age, you know, you meet people, you go out and you date people or you meet people at bars or wherever. I never really looked at people's hands to see if they had a ring. But when I met Megan, I immediately looked to see if she had a ring, and she did. So I think one of my first questions was just like, oh, how long have you been married? You know.
And I think my answer was like, you don't want to know.
Yeah. It was so well, but
we all make mistakes.
So we became friends. We clicked, we had chemistry, but we also weren't able to do anything about it at that time.
Yeah. I mean, we had our very first rehearsal at Wicked for, it was our one little partnering thing. So like, he just like lifted me off of the fountain, right? Like little boo. And I'll never forget. He put his hands on my waist and it was like electric shock all the way through my body. I was just like, what? And I was like, shit. I can't deal with this right now. And then, like, he.
Well, did that give you like? Wait. Did that give you like reason to believe that that you were getting a divorce for a reason? You know, like, were you like more sure than at that point? You're like, I'm doing the right thing.
Yes, of course, I was more sure, but it was. I was doing the right thing.
Yes,
and not to get too deep, but you know. From my perspective, I also, I didn't want to be the reason.
Yeah. And I,
you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want that to be. So I was keeping a certain distance, you know, it was undeniable, the chemistry. Mm-hmm. And she knows this now, but she was on for Glinda one day and I was on in the wings getting ready to go on and take off Fierro as one of the guards. And Kenway Kua, I don't know if you know Kenway, he was there with me, and we were watching her do Glinda because she was an understudy performing, and you know, you support and you look from the wings. And I turned to him and I just said, I'm gonna marry her someday. And he laughed because he knew she was married and he didn't know she was
I wasn't really open about everything that was happening.
So
wow.
Yeah. But then we started you ended up going out of town. Well,
so right after, this is all like in a matter of a couple weeks, right? And so then...
I left to go do Radio City Christmas show. They had an injury and they suddenly called me and were like, can you be Sugar Plum Fairy?
Such a good Sugar Plum Fairy, you guys.
I mean, I had two days of rehearsal and then I was in the
show. Yeah, but you could see your joy through that fur.
I don't know if anybody knows the Radio City show, but the Santa number where everybody's the Santa and ringing bells.
I didn't have to do
it. Learning that in 2 days and then being on stage with everybody and doing it was...
Yes.
Yeah, it was unreal.
I'm surprised you didn't have all that.
I was a singer one season, so I know. Yeah, crazy.
Wait, what year though? Because you did it though when there were singer and dancer tracks. Okay, when I did it, there was only like the one track. Everybody was lip singing silliness.
No, I did it in 2011. They had like the six singers that like
so much more sophisticated.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, when was the first time you actually?
Wicked actually called me. It was another like magical moment where I'm like sitting in my apartment crying, dealing with my divorce, and I was just like, I can't deal with this. And my phone rang, and it was my agents, and they're like, Wicked wants you in Chicago. They need a Glinda. They're like, will you stand by for Glinda for the next couple months? And I was like, yes. And so within days I was gone. So I was able to like have my space, deal with things. Like then we like would chat as friends and I could like, I was like, I have to keep you at a distance because I need to keep these two things very separate.
Right.
When you beg, the universe answers.
Should I tell about the airport?
Go for it.
All right. So
yes, airport story. Airport.
Yes. Here we go. Okay. So there was a period where she did let me know that she was going to see her her husband at the time and say, you know, we've gone through all these this process and this is the final, like, you know, I'll let you know when I see him in LA, because they were going to meet in LA.
I was nominated for an Ovation Award for Curtain, so I was going to the ceremony. I was like, I might never be nominated for anything ever again.
So she was like, I'll let you know where we're at from there. And it was basically like, is it finalized? Is it done or not? Type thing. So I asked her was like, well, when do you get back to Chicago? Send me your flight info. Like, you know, so she's like, I'm not going to talk to you for the next couple of weeks. Just, you know, hang tight. And I just need to make sure everything is clear. I found out when her flight was.
Just call me. I want to hear if you want or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Call me and you get off the plane.
So I booked a flight from New York to Chicago when she was flying back to Chicago from LA that landed 20 minutes before hers. And I waited at the gate, you know, out of sight, and waited for her to get off the plane. And I watched her get off the plane, and the first thing she did was call me. And I was like, so I just knew everything was done and that. So I was following her down the terminal as she's talking to me. And eventually.
This is romantic. Like, I love it.
I mean, it's like, we had never held hands. We had never kissed. We had never, like, at this point in our relationship, nothing. Right. And I was like, I didn't win. Like, whatever. And I was like, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm looking at the most beautiful thing in the world. And I was like, are you in a museum?
And then I just said, turn around.
Wow. Barrett, that is awesome. That's
props to you. That's good. That's really good.
Well, I had a contingency plan. I had a friend in Chicago that said I could stay with him that night, depending on how things went.
Depending if she was like, who is this stalker?
Or if she got off the plane with her husband or, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
I had to go back to work the next day. Anyway, I had to fly back to New York the very next morning. But that was kind of like the start of.
He didn't.
So I did have to return to work the next day in New York. So I did have a flight back to New York.
But Megan said you didn't.
He didn't go.
I didn't?
No.
I called in sick. Maybe I called in sick a day.
You stayed with me.
Well, no, I stayed that night, but.
So everything changed after that. And that was
that was kind of like the kickoff to the relationship, and then it became like, okay, now let's actually try dating, and let's try, you know what I mean, let's see how this goes. So,
it
worked out.
Wow,
there was no question in my mind.
Every now and then, I'm like, hey, remember when you used to do those really romantic things?
We have a similar. Yeah.
Remember you would just sweep me off my feet.
Meet me at the airport.
Meet me at the airport. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, so how soon after that were you able to get married?
We actually, I wasn't in any hurry to get married again.
We both had the same outlook on marriage as far as it's a piece of paper. You know, it's a legality, it's a piece of paper. There's nothing, we don't have any religious tie to that or ceremony. But really what it came down to when we chose to get married was probably 90% knowing that we wanted to have children. And that the legality of that is important when it comes to marriage.
Also, we wanted your mother to be a part of it.
That was another thing. Yeah, my mom, she's no longer with us, but she was suffering from MS for over 20 years. And it was getting to a point where it was like, I think she'd like to see her son and one of her sons get married. And like, it was also that. It was things like that, you know, family and friends. It's fun to have that celebration with your friends and celebrate your relationship with your friends. Yeah. So we weren't like, you know, weddings are dumb. They're great. Right. They're fun. And you love them.
Also, I mean, I think I argued with myself a fair bit because, you know, after having been married and divorced and like really putting in the effort to have a good relationship, a solid relationship with Barrett, I do love what marriage is. People do look at you differently when you say you're married. You are treated differently. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but it's the truth. I'm sure it's good sometimes and bad other times, but it's the truth. And there, I also, just making that commitment to each other in front of your family and friends, it just ties your feelings and your love for each other a little bit closer, a little bit tighter. So I wasn't like, no, I don't want to do it, but I was like, I don't need to do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, so when it became clear that we were like, or we want to have a family and we want to share this with his mom before she couldn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. We got married at the Botanical Gardens in the Bronx.
The Bronx, yeah.
Oh, nice. Wow. Well, so you got married. What year was that when you got married? Do you remember?
2010.
2010.
We're having our 10-year on the 19th of this month.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then did you make a decision like we're gonna have a baby, or did it just happen? Like, was there planning involved, like those Rockettes do?
Right.
No, it wasn't like I need to do it this month.
So the next show that we did together, besides Wicked, was How to Succeed in Business, the revival with Dan Radcliffe and John Larroquette, and us. We both were cast for that company, and once we were open, once the show was open, Megan expressed like, now might be a good time that we start looking at when we would try, you know. Mm-hmm. So we weren't trying yet.
I was like, let's just not try.
Let's just stop being careful.
Right.
And so I think it was, and we just.
The first time. Literally, bam. The first time I was like, I'm just going to sit here and hug my knees. See what happens.
Yeah. Okay. Works.
Stuck. Yeah.
Great. Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what followed was more than I ever thought I could handle. So that's why we only have one.
Well, I mean, there's so many questions I have around like working together, doing a show together, and then also like doing a show pregnant together. Was that a crazy experience for you guys? Like, how do you handle that time?
It wasn't exactly that,
though. Right. Well, to answer the first part of the question, working together just as a couple, you know, we've worked on a couple other shows as well.
I prefer
and
it.
We work really well together. I feel like we don't exist as only a couple. We still get to exist as individuals. Yeah. Like, we don't, mm-hmm. you know, it's not, sometimes one of us goes to eat dinner with some other people from the company and the other goes with others. Like, it's not like we have to go as a couple and eat with everybody. Right. But we also enjoy working with each other, and it's never felt suffocating in any way, or like a lack of, you know, independence or space. So, and we have the same kind of fun, backstage fun.
I love that.
You know.
Yeah.
So that was never like, that's how we exist.
And we've done a lot of regional shows together, which we've loved. Yeah. We worked at Houston together.
Yeah. Nice.
But then the pregnancy, yeah.
Well, so I actually was taking a leave of absence to do a little tour of Guys and Dolls. It was my first opportunity to play Adelaide. I was like, yes, I'm finally old enough to play her, you know. And they granted me, I think it was 3 months, 2 months, yeah. something like that. It wasn't that long. And it was like one of the first CETA tours that went out kind of thing. And I found out that I was pregnant the day before we started rehearsal. And it was Patty Colombo choreography, if you're familiar, right? And it was Patty Colombo, but Peggy Hickey ended up setting it. But regardless, it was madness, right? But I was thrilled to do it. And I was like, I've never been pregnant before. Like, I don't know if it's going to stick. I don't know. I don't want to make any assumptions. So I didn't tell anybody. And then I didn't tell anybody at Guys and Dolls until I wanted to get past my first trimester before I knew, you know, like, we're good to go. But I also needed to, if that was the case, leave How to Succeed, because that choreography, I could not do pregnant. We were dragged across the floor on our stomachs. We were upside down the majority of the show. Like, that just was not feasible. And probably I reached out to the team at How to Succeed, who I've worked with many times, and that probably around 2.5 months, and was like, heads up, this is what's going on. I want to see where I'm at in the next couple weeks. And they were all so kind and awesome. And they're like, whatever you want to do, we totally understand. And I guess I could have gone back to the show and then taken a medical leave for the pregnancy, then to come back kind of thing. But it just didn't feel like the right thing to do. And mm-hmm. I also was able to give another person a job by leaving, you know, a full-time job, which felt better to me, who was Shannon Lewis, a very dear friend of mine. So I ended up just finishing out the tour of Guys and Dolls and then never going back to How to Succeed. Which wasn't the plan, but that's what happened. And I ended up doing Guys and Dolls, just getting curvier and curvier and curvier. And I didn't pop until 6 months. So I would just, I finished the tour at the end of my fourth month.
Wow.
And I just had boobs I'd never had before. And just all these curves. Sarah Jenkins was on that tour and she sent a picture the other day. Recently of it, and I was like, oh my god, I look crazy because I have such a tiny little head on this big voluptuous body. And I just kept during my strip, I would just sneak out of the spotlight more and more every week.
Well, so your son is 8 now.
Mm-hmm.
What has parenting taught you, and how do you see being a parent in show business? Do you see it different as any other parent out there who works a 9-to-5 job or works in some other industry?
There's trade-offs. You know, as he gets older and school, there's more school. And I mean, now is a totally different scenario, but in the, you know, normal world scenario, it's the working the weekends, especially if you have 5-show weekends, is a little bit of a downer, you know, because you're missing those days. Those are long days that you kind of are missing with your child. And 9-to-5ers, that's their time, you know. And 9-to-5ers, you know, they get to usually take their kid to school, and they might not be there to pick them up after, but they're there for dinner and then putting them to bed. However, on the flip side, you know, I get the time during the day, during the week, to spend all those days, you know, with that, with the child, I mean, especially when they're a baby, when they're little, it's great. And,
school ruins everything.
Yeah. but it's, you know, that's as far as it relates to the entertainment business, being a parent, there's that. But it did teach, I think we both agree, it taught us once you have a child, the perspective of the importance of the work changes. I think that we had this drive. It's the reason we're in show business, is because we have the drive and the ego. And I say that in a positive way. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's obviously negative ego, but there's, you know, the positive ego to really want to be great at what we do and kind of stand front and center. And when you put a lot of importance into every audition and job, and, you know, you get really upset when you don't get something. And I think that when you have a kid, I think the perspective of life changes for the better, in that you put a little less weight into that. I think that, you know, you realize how important some things are and how important some things aren't. It doesn't mean that it's not important to get a job or get a great role in a show. It's just the perspective.
You work at it differently.
Yeah.
You show up every day, and it's almost like, I hate to say this, Marianne Lamb said this to me when we were doing curtains, and I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, work is a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how dare you? But I understand what she's saying, in that, like, every moment of your day with your kid or children is like a constant negotiation and constant, like, what do you need? What do I need? How are we figuring this out? How, what's important? How do I get you to soccer? Like, all of these things, you know. And then you get to work and you're just like, oh, I know how to do this. Like, I can kick my face and do a split and sing if I know. And I'm good. I'm good. I know how to do this. But like for me, becoming a parent was like, showed me a whole level of vulnerability and insecurity that I didn't know existed in me. I was just like, I don't know how to do this at all. And constantly questioning things. And so there's therapy, and that's good.
Well, I also know that I've been asking all the questions.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I feel like I'm taking over. I don't want to take over.
Well, also, I want to hear a little bit more about, you know, you guys have such amazing resumes. I know this is like a little bit around, a little off the topic, but you guys have such amazing resumes, and clearly what you want out of life has changed, and you just expressed that. But like, clearly you guys are both super dedicated to your craft, or you wouldn't be working the jobs that you have and continue to book the work that you get. How important do you think it is to continue to train as a dancer?
Well, I think it's super important, which is why I have an online dance school that you teach for. I think it's super important. My goals have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to keep dancing. I would love it if people would ask me to keep dancing, but I have to be realistic about what people want and where we're going. So I've, in the past 10 years, really put most of my energy into acting classes.
Oh, wait, voice lessons. Just really quick. You were on the show. What is it called? Ruby? No. No, Gypsy. Not Ruby. Gypsy. Yeah. And I love that show. I love that show.
I know a lot of theater people who loved that show, and it didn't get a following, so it got canceled after the first season. But I loved filming it. I had such a great time.
Yeah.
Naomi is awesome. Naomi cool. Watts. She was super sweet. I actually did a movie as well previously with her and Liev. Wow. And I think that's kind of why, like, I got that job, because she knew me from the other thing. Again, right. Connections.
She knew you could show up and do your thing.
Yeah. I was like the bad guy. I loved it. I was so mean. I'd be like, I'm so sorry. And I had to, like, be mean to the kids, too. And she's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I'm just saying the lines.
So how did Pastor come about? Like, was that something that came about because of quarantine and COVID, or was that something that you've been working towards?
Again, it came to me through our dear friend Lisa Gaida. So Jen Frankel and her husband own a gym, mm-hmm. right, called Solace in New York, and I think they're getting ready to reopen this week. But they are entrepreneurial type people. And it was sort of their brainchild to be like, we see this need. Like, one, we need to create work for all the dancers that are out of work right now, all the Broadway dancers that don't have jobs. And two, like, this is a wonderful opportunity to get all of this talent and experience into the living rooms of potential people that want to be performers or just live it or just fans, mm-hmm. you know? And Lisa was like asked originally to be a part of the team to start it up, but she's going to school to be a therapist. So she was like, here, have Megan. And so I'm grateful she did, cause I am loving it. I'm loving being a part of it. I've never created a business before, so I'm learning so much every day. But I'm obsessed with our teachers, such as yourself, Stephen and Brad. You did get an email.
Yeah. It's all about the timing right now.
I know. I'm teasing. I tease. I'm obsessed with everybody, and I'm obsessed with the students. Like, everybody mm-hmm. is so into it. They love all of you so much, and they love the experience. So we're super tiny right now, and we're trying to get off the ground, and I'm learning so much about it. But what I'm excited about is when we talk about equality on Broadway, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like the answer is education with the youth.
And 100.
There's so many kids out there. There are little artists inside of them, and they don't know it. They don't have that one person. We all had that one person when we were little that was like, you can do this. Mm-hmm. You got this. And that planted that seed. You know, you just need that little bit of encouragement. And all of our teachers are those people. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing as much as we can for outreach and to get to those kids and offer free classes and anything that we can do to create the exposure, you know?
Yeah. 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 And it sounds like, you know, it's kind of giving opportunity to kids that maybe not have it. And so that kind of brings me to when Broadway does come back, how do you think it'll be different? Or what do you hope that will be different?
Well, those are two very different questions.
Yeah, they're two different questions.
But what I think is going to be different, unfortunately, is I think the Broadway dancers are going to get hit the worst. Mm-hmm. It's the most unsafe part of the puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're breathing on each other, we're spitting on each other, we're singing in each other's faces. I feel like that's going to be a while before that comes back.
What she's saying too is that they're more likely to produce two-person plays, you know, smaller productions with less people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do I hope?
Yeah.
I hope that everybody calms the F down. I want everybody to just chill out.
Please.
Stop spending all this money on a costume that can't be cleaned mm-hmm. or is only worn for 30 seconds. Or a set piece that is unrealistic and your cast can't fit on the stage because of it. The lighting design that is absurdly unacceptable. Like, it's, you can't maintain it. Like, let's calm all that down and let's put the focus on the people that are on stage, the people that work backstage, the people that keep the show running.
Agreed.
100%. Amen.
Agreed.
I will add one thing about the training or the credit. I am grateful for my training, and I continued to train. I didn't go to college, right? I left out of high school. I graduated early and started working, but I found as I went that I needed to keep up. You know what I mean? I learned when I got to New York, oh, wait, I have to be able to sing and dance if I want to get hired. You know, so I continue to privately do those types of things. But I also just, yes, 10 credits are I'm so grateful and they're wonderful. But at the same time, a lot of those shows didn't last very long. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to take away from people who have a career. They may only have two shows, but they, you know, that's still, to me, that's still just.
You've done those two shows for a long time. Like, yeah. You make a lot of money.
It's just, that's being part of the career and being lucky to be part of the Broadway community. So, you know, yeah. I'm grateful for the amount, but I don't think that the number of shows just necessarily says.
But
that
it's still impressive. It don't diminish it. It's okay. Still really impressive.
Very lucky to have opportunity to work with a lot of different people, and I'm very grateful.
Well, you both inspire us as performers and as a family.
And as family people. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Okay, so we're going to move into a segment we call Spotlight on Love.
All right, here's the question. It's from an anonymous follower on Instagram. And he says, I recently moved in with my boyfriend, and on a few occasions now, he has lost his temper and kicked me out of the apartment because he said I wasn't listening to him. Most recently, he told me he wants to work through it. Am I setting myself up for disappointment by staying? What is the best way to stay in my power and stay in the relationship? Wow.
Woof. That's a tough one. I mean...
Yeah. What? Wait, what do you mean? I think that, first of all, like, kicking somebody out of an apartment does not give them the ability to listen. So that right there is
unfair
and not helping from the other person's point of view on how to resolve any issue.
Right.
So it's kind of a false, you know, that's kind of a false option, I guess. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I think you understand what I'm getting at. So communication is key, obviously. If you can't communicate, then maybe if you really can't communicate and find a way to communicate, then it might not be the right relationship.
Right. I mean, I think, so that made me think, sit down first and talk about why throwing somebody out of an apartment is an option.
Yeah.
Where does that come from in your past? Where does, like, that sort of dramatic, are you putting on a show? Are you living a life of drama? Are you putting something on? Or do you want to have a real relationship? Because a real relationship doesn't involve that sort of behavior, you know? Most successful relationships, I think, could be considered pretty boring to some, you know, and that's okay.
And if somebody is saying to you that you're not listening, the answer can't be, yes, I am. Or what are you talking about? That, you know, it is, okay, tell me what it is that I'm not listening to. You know what I mean? You have to give that person the ability to express themselves and lay out their case. And hopefully, as a couple, one of the biggest things is you'll learn compromise. And not a negative compromise.
Yeah.
It's not about giving up. It's just about agreeing on
a middle ground,
of where the rules are and what things are.
I mean, I also would suggest writing things down. I find that helpful. Like, if both people sit and write down, like, what you feel like is not being heard, or what the person thinks they heard, and then comparing your notes after the fact to see where you've gone awry, where things aren't happening. Mm-hmm. But, you know, another way to look at this whole thing is to say, I think a lot of us performers, specifically, because we are so motivated and such doers, we tend to work at something unnecessarily. And it's hard to say you are not a failure by a relationship ending. If it's not the right relationship, and I know that's from an experience, because I continued into something because I thought, oh, I have to. Like, I have to see it through to the end. I started this, you know. But if you're unhappy and you're being treated poorly, then that's not the sort of thing you want in your life. And you have to, that person needs to sit down with themselves and say, what kind of relationship do I want? What do I deserve? And is this person providing that for me? And if they're not, it's okay to walk away. Give them a chance. I think you should give them a chance. But if it's, if it continues, nobody deserves to be treated that way. And it's not a failure to walk away. It's not a failure to take care of yourself.
Yeah. I love what you said about writing things down. I feel like one of the things we learned in therapy was kind of to say, when somebody says something, you say, what I'm hearing you say is, then repeat it back so that you know that you're on the same page. But then like my reactive self says to this question, well, if they kicked you out, then just be done. You know, that's part, that, that would be like my quick, and like, that's,
I mean, my thought is like, it's crazy. The question he asked at the end is like, how do I stay in my power and stay in the relationship? And in my head, I'm like, if you want to stay in your power, move out and work on the relationship.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's go good.
Get,
I like that,
get your own space. And if you want to work on the relationship, because then you're, that's how you own your power, because he's taking away your power every time he kicks you out.
I guess there's other, you know, factors of, is it equally shared space in that? Is it owned? Is it names on the list? There's also that. And that factors in. And then also, like, you know, just in case, does this happen when people are under the influence of, you know, alcohol or something, you know, not, you know, then make, you got to take that factor off the table to actually communicate too. So,
That's really good.
Smart,
really good advice. You guys are smart. Well, so where can we find you? People find you and follow you?
Instagram.
Instahole.
What's your handle on Instagram?
Barrett Martin NYC, I believe.
Yeah, I'm just Megan Sephora.
I'm not a big, you know, I'm not on there a lot, but I'm there.
But he's there.
He likes to try to not have followers. You're on Twitter a fair.
I am on Twitter, but that's more, I do that more just to read news headlines. I'm not really a, you know.
I'm on Twitter. If you like message me, I'll get it. But otherwise, I don't understand.
Well, Twitter is like, but also Pastor.
Yeah.
Is that a
that's the handle is on Pastor.
Great.
So you can come dance with us on Pastor.
Yes. So go follow them on all their social accounts. Thank you for coming and being
guests. Thank you so much for
coming.
This was so much fun. Thank you guys.
You guys are the cutest. Yeah.
And to all of our listeners, don't forget to love who you love
and love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.